Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Monday evening of the yard, we got back from Athens, I guess about 11 o'clock last night, and I had to drive through some incredibly wet weather. It was a little bit hairy for a while, everybody driving with their hazard lights on, but we made it home safe and sound, spent a little time with the wife, and then sacked out and slept late today. Yeah, first time in a while, be able to sleep late. I think it's just kind of the, maybe the adrenaline dump, you know what I mean? You interject so much emotional energy into the things you're passionate about, and for me, that's Mississippi State sports, and we had a great team. We just weren't elite, and I think Georgia kind of proved that, and obviously there's, a lot that can be said about that. We're not going to go back and recap games today, but instead we're going to kind of look at the season in its totality, what it all means, what I think we need to do this summer to get better so that we are in Omaha next year. I think it's safe to say, and I agree with Wes Johnson. You know, Wes Johnson said that Mississippi State shouldn't be there. Not that we didn't deserve to be there, that we deserve to be somewhere else, that we deserve to be higher than the 14 seed. And I think Georgia got the most difficult of the super regional pairings, but when it was all, maybe one could argue Auburn and Ole Miss, but you know, one could come back and say, you know what, hey, you know, this doesn't look right. And but the reality of it is, you know, we didn't take care of business in the month of May, and so we dropped from the top eight conversation into the hosting discussion. We were in safely, but we've got nobody to blame but ourselves in that respect. And that's as simple as I can say it. I had Georgia fans coming up to me after the game and said, hey, you know, that game should have been played in Omaha. That game was between the two best teams in the country. And I don't know that I agree with that. I think you can throw Texas in there too. But we've earned their respect. But at the end of the day, too, we're not playing baseball anymore. And that's what bums me out. And that's the thing, too, that I don't think a lot of people get, right? Covering this team as extensively as I do, you get to know the players, their families, a lot better than most. And when you walk out there on the last day and you see the parents crying and all the other parents hugging and, you know, the players are getting ready for what's next, it's a difficult thing. It is. It's difficult. And it's tough to remain professional. It truly is. Because you want it so bad, you want us to go win another national championship, and you know that many of these people you will likely never see again the rest of your life. You said, but Steve, you never know. We know, right? We've lived long enough to experience these things every single year in some respects, right? There are some guys, obviously, that'll be around for a little while. You know, maybe there are some guys that, you know, dating a Mississippi State student or a young lady from our area, they'll pop up every now and again. They'll come back in the off season to spend time with their friends, but eventually they move on. I remember Jake Mangum talking to Jake just a couple years after he had left Mississippi State. And after that 2021 team won the national championship, there weren't a lot of people that had a connection to Jake other than being fans themselves. Jake had a place here, and he comes and works out in facilities and things like that in the offseason. But, you know, Jake's not around a whole lot because he's out playing Major League Baseball. And there are other guys out there that decide, hey, we're going to make Starkville our home. Starkville's where we met. We had a great time here. We're going to stay here. But there are some people that maybe the only time you're going to see them is at a reunion or an alumni game. And that's a difficult thing to take. You know, somebody that has really been a part of your life for the better part of, you know, 2 to 3 years, now all of a sudden they're gone. And that's what life does to you, right? The path is the path. And we're so grateful that for a while we shared the path together. But it doesn't make it any easier when it's all said and done, when it's time to say goodbye for what may be the last time. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. It's going to be back in Starkville so I can have some Bulldog Burger Company. And I'll have some within the next 36 hours. I'm not sure if it's dinner or lunch or tomorrow night dinner, but I will partake in some Bulldog Burger Company. And I love eating local when I travel, but I love getting home to eat my favorite restaurants in my favorite town around my favorite people. And that's Bulldog Burger Company in Starkville, Mississippi, the home of the Mississippi State Bulldogs. You need to find your own favorites. There is a Bulldog Burger Company in town or on the way to town for most of you, right? And I would encourage you to have the spring rolls as your appetizer. I feel like the season has taken a bit of a toll on me, and my spring roll intake is probably down a little bit. Part of that's because the last couple of times I ate there, I got the chili cheese fries. I throw some jalapenos on mine because I like a little spice in life. Maybe you don't. It's okay. I'm not judging you. But I love the jalapenos on just about anything. And find your own favorites, right? Those new Smash Burgers are a hit. The Biscoff Cheesecake is a hit. You're going to like the new items on that menu if you haven't partaken. And it is summertime. Many of you have cause to come up here, whether it's summer baseball tournaments or band camps or cheerleading camps. There's always a reason to come to Starkville and enjoy the delicacies available to you at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. And as always, have those spring rolls. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. In addition to that, get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. Now, we're going to be honest with one another. I feel like this team, as we began the season, was capable of making it to Omaha and competing for a national championship. With over 50 games of evidence for us to view, I don't know if that's accurate. Now, I think we could have made it to Omaha if we'd had a little bit better draw, but I don't know if this team was capable of winning a national championship. And I'll tell you why. I think the bullpen issues were simply too much to overcome. And I think when we go back and look at the totality of the season, especially the month of May, that's when it was evident that we were having some issues. And again, not having Ryan McPherson for 2 months and then kind of getting him back less than 100%, that was difficult for us to overcome. Losing William Kirk in the middle of the year to another ACL injury, a guy that at the very least could have eaten up some midweek innings and saved some guys for the weekend, or potentially been a left-handed middle reliever on the weekends, that was difficult to overcome. The injuries are part of the game, okay? You know, your roster flex is part of the game. You know, Jackson Loger was a guy that we signed that really didn't pitch much at all this year. You know, you go back and look at that portal haul, and we're going to. There were some guys we expected to pitch significant innings that did not. And in the end, the chickens came home to roost. There's only so much that a great offense can overcome. And I think this weekend kind of exposed all of it. And I think it validated our own belief about our team. Number one, we can swing it with anybody. But we struggle to get outs late in ball games on the mound. And we do some things at times it's not winning baseball. One of the things I think that you'll find is interesting, I wrote a column at the beginning of the year, and I said, is the Mississippi State home run record in jeopardy? Well, you may recall, we set the new record last year, and it was the first time in school history that we had surpassed the 100 home run plateau. We had 103 home runs. That's impressive. It is. And the fact that we'd only done it once is incredible. Well, now we've done it twice. We hit 129 home runs this year. 129. We only gave up 68, right? So we nearly doubled what we gave up. It's impressive. We hit 318. Our opponents hit just 243. Yeah. And so if you look at those numbers, you begin to think to yourself, this team should compete for a national championship. But there's a lot more to it than that. And kind of working through this, Bryce Chance led us in hitting this year at 349. And listen, Bryce Chance was never going to be a star, right? And I mean that as much respect as I can. What I'm saying is, like, Bryce was never going to be the centerpiece of this offense. He was an incredibly important piece of this offense, an incredibly important part of this team. especially during the transition. We had Bryce Chance talking to portal visitors, talking about the expectations of playing at Mississippi State. Bryce Chance has been a tremendous leader for Mississippi State, and we're going to miss him. We are going to miss Bryce Chance. And at the end of the day, Bryce is a left fielder playing center, right? And he played some center for us and did a good job, had a fielding percentage of 1,000. And there really weren't a lot of balls that kind of eluded him in the gap. He did a really good job reading the ball, tracking fly balls, and ran down some balls that I don't think a lot of people thought he could. But Bryce, really good year for him. I don't know what's next for him, but he always has a home here. Always. And again, there's so many people, years and years and years, and I'll be honest, in the beginning I thought, I don't know if this is sustainable or not. But every year, some of our baseball fans, though well-intended, said, we'll recruit over Bryce Chance. But you know what? We never did. Bryce kept working hard and improving and had a tremendous career here at Mississippi State. He's not going to be a Ring of Honor honoree. He's not. But he is a guy that stuck with Mississippi State because he loved Mississippi State. He loved all of you. And he gave his all for Mississippi State. Noah Sullivan, of course, spent 2 years with us. Hit 13 jacks this year, 46 RBI, and he was 10 of 12 in stolen bases, which is second only to Bryce Chance, who had 13. Noah, in many respects, was kind of one of our biggest leaders, one of our most vocal leaders on the team, and he backed it up with his play. It's one thing to talk, but Noah did the walk. And you could say, you know what, Steve, I expected a bigger year out of him. Maybe that's fair. But he hit 342 with 13 jacks and 46 RBI. And protected Ace Reese a good bit, too. And I thought down the stretch, Noah was good. Of course, there's the fabulous freshman, now freshman All-American, according to the American Baseball Writers Association, Jacob Parker, third on the team with a .339 batting average. And guys, we played 62 games this year. He only started 44 of them. Yeah, so 18 games he didn't start. And that was earlier in the year. And he'll tell you, he's not bitter about that. He's like, hey, I wasn't ready. And how many young people have that level of sense awareness, self-awareness? Everybody shows up with a sense of entitlement, thinking they should be the guy. Well, Jacob Parker is going to be the guy. And he's absolutely outstanding. A tied Rafael Palmeiro's freshman home run record with 18, 62 RBI, which was second on the team. And 7 of 10 in stolen base attempts, and 2 of those were kind of purposeful attempts to steal a run. I thought we probably made a mistake with one of those over the weekend. Not him, but I thought we didn't play it well. And you don't want to give outs away. You want to apply pressure, but you don't want to let people off the hook, and we did. And then there's Ace Reese. Ace hit .336, hit 24 jacks, 74 RBI, one of the best offensive seasons in the history of Mississippi State baseball, and that's saying a lot. I'd say an awful lot. Started all 62 games, as he should. Scored 73 runs, which is a team high. I can tell you the analytics that the pro scouts use for Ace Reese are off the charts. And some would say, well, you know, Stevie, he didn't have the year I thought he would. Well, I don't know what you were expecting. Only been two players in the history of our program that went 20-20. Ace Reese is one of those, and Clark and Palmeiro are the others. Maybe I'm forgetting. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. You know, on this show, we talk about a lot of complicated issues, and you know that I'm a believer in taking care of your mental health. Just about everybody agrees that mental health should be a priority, but it still makes it tough to ask for help sometimes. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma Report surveyed 2,000 Americans. They revealed that 85% of Americans believe that getting help is wise. But for some reason, about 74% say society discourages people from doing so. Don't let that happen to you. The reality of it is that sometimes we all need a little bit of a helping hand. And you can find it with BetterHelp.com. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people around the world. It works. Got an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of your support in a better life. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up today and get 10% off BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. And Brent Rooker. But my point being, Ace Reese, I remember when we committed him out of Houston, I had a Major League Baseball scout tell me, Steve, you don't know what a big deal this is. This guy's a future first rounder. And then, of course, people are like, hey, we didn't get enough impact guys in the portal. And now here we are, Ace Reese, a two-time All-American, and done some historic things in our uniform. And we are absolutely going to miss him. Garrett Frye, of course, transferred in from North Alabama. Hit 325 for us and 12 jacks, 47 RBI. I don't know how many leadoff hitters in the country had double-digit home runs. And it took a while for Gehrig to kind of settle. Because, you know, we started the year as James Nunnally was our leadoff guy. Then we went to Aiden Teal. Then it was Bryce Chance for a while. This lineup really kind of solidified with Gehrig at the top. And he is a very, very, very good young man. And done some incredible things for us. And the thing that I go back to is, like, he was a career third baseman. And last year he had never played outfield. And he's like, I'll give it a shot just to be in the lineup, and actually did a pretty good job for us. And then this year he worked hard to compete and won the second base job. And Gatlin Sanders, was pretty much your everyday second baseman down the stretch last year and played well, was kind of a punch and Judy hitter. But the fact that Gat Sanders was still such a great teammate, even though he lost his starting position, and became basically your de facto pinch runner of choice. I had so many people tell me, man, Gat's just happy to be here and wear the uniform and contribute any way he can. That speaks to that young man's family, speaks to the culture of Mississippi State baseball, and also to the fact that Garrick Frye and Gat Sanders just didn't have beef, right? Reed Stallman hit 318 with 13 jacks, 55 RBI, and he only started 43 games. Think about this. Reed Stallman started less games than Jacob Parker. And I remember when we signed him out of Campbell, people were like, oh, what are we doing? He only hit 240. Yeah, look how silly that looks now, right? I mean, we talked about it then, how the analytics just kind of favored the fact that there was more in the tank there than there proved to be. And, man, what a great job that Reed did for us. And I thought defensively, really in the last six, 7 weeks of the season, he was absolutely outstanding. Ryder Woodson, first year as a starter, and kind of unfairly maligned at times by our fan base. He's had some ups and downs. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But 272 average, and he had 9 jacks and 41 RBI. He'll be a double-digit home run guy next year. And, yes, barring something totally unexpected, he will be your shortstop next year. Vito Valencias, I'll be honest with you, he proved me wrong. Started 29 games, played in 38. Of course, when Aiden Teal got hurt and kind of fell out of the lineup, it was Vito that stepped up. 7 jacks, 30 RBIs, and he hit 372. Yeah, 38 games played, 29 starts, and he hits 372. Andrew Raymond, of course, is now in the transfer portal, but that's another guy that came in last year to compete with Kevin Malewski. Blake Bevis, a guy that hit 346 for us in a limited amount of time, 5 jacks, 23 RBI. Drew Wires, another guy that people were excited about because, he was conference player of the year last year. Hit 4 jacks, 16 ribby, of course, the big one against Texas. Sean James, of course, a guy that transferred over from UVA. Appeared in 26 games, started 13. Also had a home run. Aiden Teal, a guy that we thought had all SEC potential, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with him because of the fact that I don't think that he did enough this year to really magnify his Major League Baseball profile. I think maybe he needs another year, but he loses a lot of leverage. It's an interesting situation, but he only hit 294, 5 jacks and 22 RBI, started in 45, appeared in 38 games, and really became a defensive replacement for us late. But we really expected him to be an all-SEC candidate. And illness and injury kind of derailed those plans. You know, James Nunnally started out as your everyday right fielder. You know, people forget it was Chance, Teal, and Nunnally is the starting outfield for a while. Nunnally was the de facto leadoff hitter for a while. His contact rate is outstanding, but he hits too many ground balls. It's one thing we got to work on is turning those ground balls into line drives. He hit 241. One home run, 5 jacks. And then Kevin Malewski, still with a crazy stat line, 34 hits this year, 13 of them are home runs. So for every three hits, it's a dinger, right? It's crazy. And that's a guy, too, that he may get some calls late. It'll be interesting what he could do. I think that he is a guy that could probably make more money in NIL and rev share than he could with the MLB contract. And I think if he comes back next year, MLB will still be there, but also he could improve his stock. But, just looking at that offensively, it's like you get a little nostalgic about all this stuff, right? And we'll always remember these guys. You know, on the pitching side, you know, hey, we didn't say goodbye to too many guys because just about everybody's going to be back, right? Tomas Valencias, obviously, will be back. Duke Stone will be back. We mentioned Jackson Logar earlier. He got one appearance this year. One appearance through one inning, struck out three, walked one. And then we never saw him again. Don't know what happened there. Don't know all the details, but I wish he could have contributed a little bit more. And I'm sure he wished he'd had more of an opportunity. I don't know the details. I'm not a casting aspersions or anything like that. Maddox Miller went 4-2 this year with a 2.45 ERA. 25 freshman innings. And he hadn't pitched a whole lot. And one of the things that I think is important, too, is he's never lifted weights before he got here. He is only going to get bigger and stronger. And the fastball and the changeup are real. Just got to spin the ball a little bit better. That'll come in time. You know, I think the next year is going to be extremely important for him. And I think maybe he's your Tuesday guy next year because you feel like you know what your weekend rotation is going to be, you know, with McPherson and Tico and Duke. And all those guys are going to sign a pro contract after next year, right? But you let Maddox be your Tuesday guy, and then if you need somebody to be a spot starter on the weekends, he can handle that. And then you groom him to be a weekend guy in 2028. And this is another guy that's going to sign a pro contract. I mean, he has a plus-plus changeup. Like, if people, well, they have changeup. Well, he has a plus changeup. MLB scouts will tell you he's a plus-plus changeup. You don't see changeups with the shape and arm speed that he has very often, especially from the left side. It's crazy. And so his best days are ahead of him. Peyton Fowler, of course, a guy that we weren't sure how much he could help us. He goes 1-0 this year with a 2.84 ERA, just pitched a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see. Batting average against Peyton Fowler, guys, .091. So maybe there's a little more left in the tank for him. Parker Rhodes, of course, was a little bit banged up at times this year. And he's another big arm that we expect some big things from. He went 1-0 this year with a 3.18. Dane Burns is a guy that got drafted a couple years ago, bypassed that, came to state at 23 innings. 28 appearances, went 2-1 with a 3.52. Down the stretch, though, Dane had some struggles for sure. And there's Ryan McPherson, 4-1, 3.56 ERA. And again, you wonder where we'd be right now if Ryan had been healthy all year. Not his fault. That's just what life dealt us. Ben Davis goes 0-2, 5 saves, 3.64. I got people still telling me Ben Davis is going to throw in a big league someday. You know, big physical frame that can throw a sinker for a strike. We wish Ben the best. He could have signed last year but elected to come back. Tyler Pitzer, of course, is a guy that we added in portal last year, and unfortunately, he gets a loss in the last game of the year. Goes 2-3, 3.90, but down the stretch, he did some good things for us. His batting average against was just .193. Maddox Webb told me that around this time last year, I'm going to go in there and earn the job as a closer, and he did a good job, and he just wasn't the same after he took that ground ball off the calf. Everybody said he's going to be okay. Well, he never really regained the form. We discussed William Kirk earlier, and what a shame it is we don't have him. Just three appearances and the one start this year. Jack Gleason's a guy that probably threw more than most people expected, but the best baseball is ahead of Jack Gleason. He's 4-1 this year with a 5.13, but pitched some high leverage innings and kind of down the stretch a little bit. They kind of figured him out a little bit, and that's just kind of hitting the wall too. We talked about Brendan Sweeney, another guy from the portal. He no record, but, man, he went 13 appearances with two starts, and he ends up with a 5.85 ERA. He's a guy that had some challenges in South Carolina, and we thought a fresh start would be good for him. It just didn't work out the way any of us hoped. Chris Billingsley was a late addition to us and, of course, did some good things for us in the midweek. He was 1-0 this year with an ERA of 6.08 and 17 appearances, five starts. But we won most of those starts, even though he didn't factor in the decision because he only pitched two or three innings. Charlie Foster, a guy that we expected to be our regular Sunday guy, goes 0-3 with a 6.69 ERA. I'm curious to see what he decides to do. I don't know if there's room in the end. Like, if he wants to be a starter, I don't know if there's room for him here in 2027. Does he hit the portal? Does he come back and say, I'll be a left-handed middle reliever and work hard and kind of figure out a role that way? I just don't know. I like Charlie a lot, but it just hasn't worked out for him this year. Jack Bauer, of course, ERA of over 7. He goes 4-0 this year. But it's one of those things, too. Jack's best baseball is ahead of him. And people ask, what do you think he'll do next year? What do you think will happen? Is he a closer? Is he a middle relief guy? Well, it's one of those two. I don't think that he's going to be a starter unless he's just a spot starter in the midweek. Braden Booth is a guy that had 4 appearances this year and ERA of over 10. And so he's been around for a while, just through a couple of innings, through at Texas. Not exactly sure what his plans are, but he may be a guy that's looking for a career reboot. And Tanner Bellevue was a freshman this year. We threw him out there, 3 appearances this year. Had a couple of really good ones, but one at Texas kind of got next to him. But the best baseball is ahead of him. What's interesting, too, like, you work through all this stuff, man. You look at all these numbers, and you forget that it's like one day. Like, it's basically a memory of a day, right? You remember when this guy played and this guy did that. But the reality of it is, we were a great team, and we're going to finish in the top 20. But the reality of it is, that's not enough at Mississippi State. We're not happy to just reach the Super Regionals. Yes, there is a part of us, and I hate to use the word satisfied, because that's not correct. But there is a part of us, we're grateful to have hosted a regional and won it, and then went on to the Super Regional. But as Brian O'Connor said yesterday, it's about getting to Omaha and having a chance to win the national championship. That's what we're playing for. And that's what we all long for. And that's what your coach is aspiring towards. You know, we can't just say, well, you know, hey, we did something that hadn't been done in 5 years. That should be an expectation. For us to host and certainly win a regional, probably in a down year, I would say we should be a road regional team. We should never miss the tournament, not with our commitment, not with our tradition, not with our facility. We should never miss a regional. I know that may be a little bit unreasonable to assume that, but I think the foundational standard at Mississippi State should be a road regional. But we got to be able to host more years than not. We do. And I know that hadn't always been the theme. Again, there's a lot of our fans that can't differentiate between the 6 and the 4-team regional. The 6-team regionals were all about having the bigger ballparks and the facilities to accommodate big crowds. We hosted sometimes just because we put in the biggest bid, not because we had the best team. And there were times that we weren't even a 1 seed in regionals that we hosted. 4-team regionals are given on merit, not necessarily on money. And that's important to understand, because if it was about who could bring in the most money, we would host every year. LSU would host every year. Arkansas would host every year, right? And so that's important to understand. And then teams like, Vanderbilt and others probably wouldn't host every year. So they've leveled the playing field in many respects. But am I pleased? I would say yes. Am I satisfied? No. And I think it's okay to have both of those feelings. I'm pleased that we did some things we haven't done in a while. And in year one, it appears we have laid a foundation to do some even bigger things. That pleases me. But am I satisfied with losing to Georgia and not going to Omaha? No. No. And I don't think anybody should be. It's easy to reconcile the loss of expectations and say, well, at least we did this. And that's true. But I think that's one of the things that holds us back at times, is trying to find solace and maybe missing some expectations that we have for ourselves. And, maybe we expected too much. But I think in the beginning, when you go back, we were a consensus top 5 team in the country. And we'll be a consensus top 10 team in the country next year, considering what we return. How high we are will depend on what we do in the portal, right? And that's a huge part of this. As we begin to kind of put this thing together, we've got to find a way to replace some production that has been incredibly important to this program, and to protect Jacob Parker. And Jacob is going to be back. I've seen somebody's kind of, I post a picture of him talking to Daniel Jackson and Colby Branchett Georgian people lose their minds. They're like, oh my gosh, nothing is going on other than players that respect each other having a visit with their coaches right behind them congratulating each other on a great season. And all of a sudden, this self-loathing segment of the fan base, oh my gosh, Jacob Parker is fine. Okay, just stop. Stop. I get so tired of people constantly forecasting failure. I was there. I'm the one that took the picture. I'm the one that heard the conversation. You weren't. So why would you know more than me? It's crazy. It truly is. But the reality of it is yeah, we had a good season. We had a really good season. There are a lot of people out there that would look and say, man, to play in the Super Regionals, man, it's great. We'd have been so happy to do that. But we're not everybody else. We're Mississippi State. And, you know, the history of college baseball is written by those that aspire for greatness. And they work in greatness. And they invest in greatness. And they don't just be, they're not just satisfied with really good. They're not just satisfied with, hey, we had a great season. Right? We did. But we want to be elite. And so we can't just say, well, okay, no. No. Good is the enemy of great. And that's the only way to look at that. And I'm glad that we have a head coach that is like, hey, we're not going to be, you know, patting ourselves on the back because we made a Super Regional. Our goal at Mississippi State is to go to Omaha and win a national championship. It's time for today's Top 10 List. As always, brought to you by CloseWithBlair.com. C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. He rides the wave of bulldog emotion just like you and I do. Yeah. But here's the thing, too. When the waves of life come upon you and you are forced to make some decisions about where you're going to live, or perhaps maybe you've said, you know what, let's get off the renting hamster wheel, making somebody else wealthy or at least paying their mortgage, and let's put some roots in the ground and have the dream of homeownership come true for us. The only name to know is Blair Chandler. Licensed to practice in multiple states, he has closed several, and I mean several, loans with Boneyard listeners over the last few years. You could be next. Yeah, maybe you got turned down last time because maybe you weren't ready, and Blair can help you get ready, or maybe you just had the wrong loan officer. That's always something to consider. Get his 25 years of expertise and know-how working for you. Call him today at 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. For more information, visit closewithblair.com. So whether it's your first home, your next home, or perhaps your retirement home, or even that game day condo that you've always thought about getting, hit Blair up. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Okay, over the weekend, while we're out there in Georgia, ran into some Boneyard listeners, which is always great. And everybody's like, Steve, I hate to bother you. It's cool. Listen, if I don't have time to chat, I'll tell you. I will. I'll be, hey, nice to meet you. I got to run. Sorry. It's not that I'm being rude, but those are work days for us. But ran into some people downtown Athens and some Boneyard listeners. And ran into, I cannot remember their last name. I cannot. There's a young man. He's a student. He's a senior this coming year at State. Met he and his parents after I went to eat at Taco Mama's. I think that's the name of the place. Taco Mama's just downtown there. And so I was going to my car, and he's like, hey, Steve, big fan. So I went over to visit. It was very nice, and I wish that I remembered their names, but it was so nice to visit. But on Sunday, because it all runs together after a while, on Sunday, I ran into some Boneyard listeners, and just so happened I had on a Motley Crue shirt. I mean, imagine that. Our guy says, Steve, I'd never listened to Tommy Land the Ride. I do enjoy the album. And you mentioned on the show that there was like some Tommy Lee guest spots. Do you think you could do that for me? Well, Greg, here we are. Here we are. Just for you. It's the Tommy Lee guest spots. Now, one of the things I'll tell you, too, a lot of diversity in the catalog for Tommy Lee. He's done all the Motley stuff, and, of course, he did Methods of Mayhem and all kind of stuff like that. So he has branched himself out a little bit, and this list is very much indicative of that. Now, Tommy Lee's not a guy that's got to go drum for hire to make a living. as many of you know, I mean, he's a rock and roll superstar, made his money years ago and still making tons of money now. But he's worked with a lot of interesting people. So we're going to get this thing going. Do you remember Richard Marx and that big hair? I mean, like, there's so many people that talk about the big hair of the 80s. I don't think there's a guy that had bigger hair than Richard Marx. I mean, honest to goodness. And he ended up married to Daisy Fuentes from MTV, so it worked out well for him. But in many respects, like that, it's like a pompadour meets like Butthead from Beavis and Butthead. He was big, man. He had big hair. Very talented guy, but he had really, really big hair. Not that I'm one to complain about anybody's hair. But Tommy Lee played drums on a track off Richard Marx's Rush Street album. Streets of Pain. That's your number 10 track. And little did you know when you woke up this morning, you were going to find out that Tommy Lee and Richard Marx worked together. But here we are. Number 9, this is a very interesting song. It may not be for everybody. Okay, I'm just going to just lay that out there. This may not be one of those. It's very interesting, a little bit avant-garde. It's a Canadian musician named Dal Bello. And it's The Revenge of Sleeping Beauty. It's about a 6.5 minute long song, but it goes everywhere. It's quite the journey. And I wonder like how this collaboration came to be. Like, not that it would be the first question out of my mouth if I had a chance to sit and have a meal with Tommy Lee, but I would love to know how this kind of came to be. And of course, Tommy's been married 4 times, and at one time he did have a bride, 2 brides, I guess, from Canada. Maybe even 3, now that I think about it. But all that understood, maybe that's kind of how it all came to be. Maybe. Number 8. Now, this is an interesting one here. It's not Motley at all, right? It's just kind of like, it's not even alternative. It's almost kind of like teen soft rock with a little bit of angst in it. And it's Jax Mannequin. I don't know if you heard, if you're familiar with them. Track called The Mixed Tape. And we used to do that when we were kids. We'd make a tape, like, for a girl that we liked, and we'd give it to her. Like, here's some songs. It'd always be all these power ballads. And, you know, sometimes we'd work in some Cool in the Gang, like Cherish the Love We Have, you know. But that's what you did. You put a mixtape. And I know there's a Boneyard listener, a female, that confessed on Facebook some time ago that she put Right Here Waiting. Like, she made a mixtape, speaking of Richard Marx, she made a mixtape and, like, slipped it in this guy's locker. And she goes, hey, I just want to tell you, looking back, I thought that was pretty weird. You know, it really was. I'm not going to say your name. It wasn't. I appreciate the fact that you took your shot. It didn't work out. But I respect the confidence and the fact that you were bold enough to go do it. And I can only begin to imagine your heart beating out of your chest. And I don't know how you got a cassette tape in somebody's locker. I don't remember all the details behind that. But nevertheless, good on you for at least trying, even though it didn't work out. We're all better people for at least trying. Number 7, you remember this album because of the, let's just say, the PG-13 version of the song of Forget You. Now, Tommy didn't play drums on that. He didn't. But he did play on the Lady Killer outro, which is not necessarily an instrumental, but it's only about a minute and a half long. But that was his contribution, and it's pretty wild. It is. If you know the album, you know that it's done exceptionally well over the years. All right, number 6, a collaboration with Machine Gun Kelly with an outfit called Halloween in Hell. And this, again, is kind of a little more like that teen rock. And that's MGK, right? You know, of course, he played Tommy Lee in the Netflix movie The Dirt. So it made sense they would work together on some musical projects. They're friends. But it's a track called Climb. And it's basically about reassuring, you know, the teen romance. You know, I would never leave you. I'd always be by your side. I mean, and honestly, the lyrics are very sophomoric and very basic and elemental. I'm not taking a shot here. But it's interesting that that T. Lee is on that track. Number 5. You may not know this, and I suspect many of you don't. You're going to be surprised, and you're going to be intrigued. So you know what, Steve? I think I'm going to go listen to this. Because of the fact that, number 1, it's a band that you knew, many of you from my era, that you knew from the early 90s, and you loved it. You loved them, and you loved so much of what they did. And then you got older and started paying the mortgage and, raising kids. You didn't have time to go out and buy new music. But way back in 2014, a dozen years ago, Tommy Lee played every drum track on the Smashing Pumpkins album, Monuments to an Elegy. It's really good. I mean, it's not Siamese Dream. It's not Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. But it's really good. It's really good. And I think it's worth your time. If you've ever loved the Smashing Pumpkins at any point in your life, I think this album is worth you giving a try to. We're going to go with the track One and All, which in many respects, it sounds like something like in between Siamese Dream and Melancholy and Infinite Sadness. It sounds like that maybe it was an old song that got revitalized. And Tommy Lee, again, played every track on this album, which is, I think is super cool. More on Billy Corgan a little bit later. Number four, many of you know Rob Zombie. And you know the work with White Zombie, of course. And you should, right? That's just, you know, if you've been born in this era, you know all about Rob Zombie. And, you know, Thunder Kiss 65. I mean, sometimes I just put it on and just bounce, right? But you know Hillbilly Deluxe by the track Dragula. You know that one. Well, Tommy didn't play on that. Hillbilly Deluxe, pardon me. He didn't play on that one, but he has appeared on a couple of Rob Zombie albums, including this one. He had two tracks, but we're going to go with Meet the Creeper. Rob Zombie's Meet the Creeper at number four. Number three, Billy Corgan at one time had an on-again, off-again relationship with Courtney Love. And, of course, you know, she had great success with her band Hole. She did some solo stuff, too. And there are a couple singles that Tommy was a part of, but we're going to go with Courtney Love's Wedding Day. And it's kind of like a punk rock version of Alanis Morissette's Ironic. Isn't it ironic? And a lot of those things, like Alanis Morissette sang about, it wasn't ironic. It just sucked, right? Like, you know, like a black fly on your Chardonnay. That just sucks, right? Rain on your wedding. It just sucks, right? It's not really ironic. It just sucks. Well, this is kind of in that same vein. And she talks about, I'm the kind of person that'd break my neck on wedding day. You know, it's a little more dramatic and hyperbolic, shall we say. But Courtney Love's Wedding Day at number three. Number two. Now, this is a song, too, that I think many of you have probably never heard from a band that you know well. And one of the reasons maybe you don't know it well is because Brent Scallions wasn't the singer on this particular album. And I think that's maybe fair, right? But off the album Angels and Devils, it was the fourth album, and Touring Green was the singer, right? Touring Green was the singer. And Tommy Stewart, the drummer from Fuel, was doing some other stuff. So Tommy Lee sat in and did a great job on this particular track. And it's called Wasted Time. It's not the Skid Row version, but it's incredible. And again, I don't think you guys probably know a lot about this one, but I think you should. Even though, listen, Brent's an incredible voice, okay? But what's so crazy about this one is it made the U.S. mainstream rock charts and peaked at 24 without a lot of promotion. And I think that's interesting. And to me, I think it speaks to the quality of the track and the vocal that Touring Green delivered. And I think you guys will enjoy this. Again, if you go back and you begin to think about Fuel and what you liked about Fuel, I think, other than Brent Scallion's voice, and of course, it seems like everybody has been in Fuel, even me and you. We just don't remember it. Perhaps we're too hungover. But this is a song that I think you should give a shot to. I really, really do. And it's like when you go back and think about all the things that happened with Brent Scallions and those guys. This was like the first album without Brent. And then, of course, they get back together and so I guess it's technically the only album without Brent Scallions. And I love Brent Scallions' voice. I do. I think it's incredible. But this is one of those songs, which is the reason it's number two on the list, that I always like to turn you guys on to some things. that maybe you're unfamiliar with, this is one of them. But number one, and we actually talked about this one on the last T. Lee list. He plays the drums on the great Post Malone song, Over Now, right? And, of course, it kind of fits exactly what Tommy wants to do. Huge hit off the Beer Bongs and Bentleys album, huge hit. And that's Tommy Lee. And you probably didn't know that was Tommy Lee on the drums until you listened to the show. So there you go. Top 10 Tommy Lee guest spots. He's had some others. He did some dubstep stuff and some electronic music. Some of that stuff's out of print. Some of it wasn't very good. And it's not Tommy's fault. But, you know, Tommy is a searcher. And he's always out there looking for something cool to work on. And that's kind of what, you know, it's made him have all this longevity. I mean, I don't think we're going to have new music from Motley anytime soon. Every time you turn around, it's like, hey, we're working on new stuff. Ah, this is probably it for a while, you know. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I'm happy that they have attempted to make some more music. And I know many of you are, you know, it's like, well, I'm just kind of sick of Motley. Well, you know, you can be sick at home and you can be sick and be quiet too. You know, you don't have to enjoy. Oh, they should just go ahead and retire. Well, maybe you should keep quiet. Did you consider that? You know, you don't have to have an opinion and a comment on everything. I enjoy the fact that John Five did some music after Mick Mars left the band. And listen, I get it. Mick Mars is the guitarist we all grew up with. Mick is also, in many respects, kind of the backbone of the band. I mean, that gritty tone is kind of what made Motley Motley. And I get it. People are like, hey, without Mick, it's not Motley. Well, yeah, it is. I mean, really, the only guy that's been in the band the entire time is Nikki Sixx, who is the leader of the band. You know, Tommy left for a while, and he was doing the Methods of Mayhem stuff, and Randy Castillo was with them for a while. There were a lot of different people that have been in and out of the band. You know, and Mick was another that was, you know, from the beginning, stuck it out. And then he retires. He's got some health issues, and there was a big lawsuit, and Mick lost the lawsuit, which, you know, you hate all that stuff. But guys, if like the song Dogs of War that Motley put out a couple years ago, that's a great song. It truly is. And the EP was called Canceled, you know, and there's a song on there about that, but Dogs of War is really, really good. It's probably the best Motley song since Saints of Los Angeles. And you'd have to go back a little ways, but Dogs of War is really, really good. It was the first song in 5 years. And so they were talking about, hey, there'd be another album, but there was not a full-length album. But, yeah, we'll see what happens long-term. But I'm happy to have some new Motley in my life. And if you know what, here's the thing. It's a free country. If you don't want to hear new Motley, nobody's making you listen to it. If you want to hear new Motley, then you have the right to listen to it. And so I don't know. People are like, oh, they should just give it up. Guys, they don't need the money, despite what you may think. They do not need the money. They own everything Motley. 360. They have a 360 deal with everything. Matter of fact, I just bought some new Motley shirts. You get the shirts in. It doesn't have a Fruit of the Loom tag in it. It's a Motley tag. They even own the shirts. The company itself, right? It's just, you know, it's all their label. So, but anyway, we're going to celebrate Motley on the show from time to time. And I'm wearing a Stark Villain shirt today, but I wore Motley. I got those three Motley shirts in. I wore them every day, one day in a row. So, but if you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, who also likes Motley. Yeah, it's true. He likes Motley as well. Hit him up on xdogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle. So there you go. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Yeah, how about that? It's true. We're in a Starkvillian shirt, and we're repping the Starkvillians, right? But the reality of it is you can find all the things that you covet when it comes to Mississippi State merch at Campus Bookmart. Now stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in town. You'll be glad you did. They've got incredible selection, whether it be apparel or gift ideas or decorative items for your home, your office. your yard, you can find them at Campus Bookmart. Everything you need is right there. Everything you need. And if you can't make it to town and you'd love to support a Starkville business, which we always, always encourage, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. And that is BSR. That's beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right. We got to figure out who we're going to cheer for in the College World Series. Now, many of you are going to be like, you know, say, hey, dude, I'm done. I'm done with the College World Series. When Mississippi State got eliminated, then my interest level was eliminated as well. And I get that. I'm the same way about, like, men's basketball, women's basketball. Like, if Mississippi State is playing, I am totally engaged. Once we're out, I'm done. Right, I'm absolutely done. But with baseball and football, it's different for me. And I love those sports. I love them all, but I love those two the most. So I will watch with great interest when the eight teams in Omaha take the field. And it's so interesting, too. I don't know if you guys have kept up at all, but seven of the eight super regionals were sweeps. Seven of the eight. The only one that wasn't was North Carolina and so in USC. And give USC some credit, man. They ended up one win away from Omaha, didn't get the host. Everybody talked trash about them, including me. And they're like, hey, we're going to put a chip on our shoulder and go play. So let's kind of review the weekend, right? So West Virginia just absolutely destroys Cal Poly. And again, I get these people talking about we should reseed. I'm totally against that. The bracket's a bracket. You shouldn't be the Cinderella. And then you go upset a one seed in their home regional, and then you got to go play another number one when you get to Omaha. I just don't get that, right? So the bracket's a bracket. But, man, West Virginia, and I, again, a team that I really had some doubts about, man, they rolled through this thing, 12-2 and 17-1. I guess Cal Poly, of course, kind of caught lightning in a bottle because of the fact that basically St. Mary eliminated UCLA. And then I think St. Mary had the adrenaline dump and Cal Poly just kind of took advantage. So West Virginia headed to Omaha. They will play Troy. Now Troy takes two from Arkansas Little Rock, and our friend Michael O'Brien is now in the portal again. Wish him the best. But Troy wins 12-2 and then 7-2. Great job pitching-wise. And again, you know, Troy is a team last year. It was really a disservice that they didn't make it. They won every weekend series until the last one. And then didn't have a great run in the Sun Belt. And people are like, eh, no. And now here's Troy's like, give Skylar Meade a lot of credit. He's a guy that probably should be a Power 5 coach somewhere, and he will be at some point. But they sweep Little Rock. They will play West Virginia head-to-head in game one. And that left side of the bracket, we mentioned North Carolina takes care of USC. And I went to a place called Fully Loaded Pizza there in Athens. And it was great. It was great. And yeah, I know some of you like don't like pineapple on pizza. And that's your right as an American. It is. I like pineapple on pizza on occasion. And I got their Hawaiian that had ham and bacon and jalapenos and pineapple and pepperoni. And I sat there and I enjoyed watching that ball game for a while. And then I went to the hotel to get some work done for you guys. But I tell you, it was a great meal. Now, game one, USC wins 9-5. And then North Carolina bounces back to take game two in a shutout 4-0. And then eventually in game three, kind of a wild game there. But they win it 4-3. So the Tar Heels, you know, the pride of the ACC, makes their way to Omaha. And again, after the regional round, North Carolina was the only ACC team left, and then they win their super. Again, and you can't sit here and say that USC was a gimme. That's a top 10 RPI team, and I get they didn't play a strong non-conference schedule, but the reality of it is that team could swing it. A surprise to me, and I'll be honest with you. Now, and I shared with you guys and other listeners around the state when I was on statewide radio, after state swept Ole Miss, people are like, oh, we got to fire Mike Bianco. And I said, guys, that team is better than you think. And now here they are in Omaha. And then they go to Auburn. And I thought Butch Thompson and those guys would have the pitching plan to kind of neutralize the Ole Miss offense. And they did in some ways, but not enough. And you didn't throw Marciano, right? You threw the two guys I thought would give Ole Miss the most trouble, Alvarez and Petrovic. And Ole Miss wins at 6-4 and 5-3. And Auburn had their opportunities but couldn't cash in. Give Ole Miss a lot of credit, too, on the pitching side. And Hunter Elliott's had some struggles, but, man, this guy in the postseason's been lights out. I mean, and you say lights out, he's won, right? So Ole Miss in a good position here. The problem they have is they get North Carolina first. And whoever wins between Ole Miss and North Carolina long term is going to win this bracket, right? Now, again, I don't want to just, you know, talk poorly of West Virginia. I mean, a team, it's difficult to beat a team that believes in itself. But I think this bracket, obviously, is the easier one, right? Ole Miss gets all non-conference opponents in that bracket. But UNC is legit. They are. This West Virginia team has played exceptionally well. I just wonder, like, if West Virginia can pitch it against Ole Miss. You know, how often in the Big 12 did they see, like, these beer league softball players that can just step up there and just rip it, right? You don't see it very often, right? I mean, Bichetta obviously can swing it. Furness had a big weekend. And then, of course, you know, Troy, you know, we love the Cinderella. I would love for Troy to win this. I would love it. I think it would be great. Again, for you Grow the Game nerds, this is how it's done. You earn it in the framework it's already established. You don't lower the hurdles. Now, let's get to the other side of the bracket, which was formerly known as our side of the bracket. I give Kansas a little credit here, but Oklahoma really had no trouble with them. And I think, hey, it's a historic season for Kansas, but they ran up against somebody, number one, that's more talented than them, that has played more competition than them, and had some bats. And Oklahoma wins at 8-1, 13-2. So they sweep the Super Regional in Lawrence, Kansas, to advance to Omaha. And that's the team early in the year. They didn't get to host, right? They had to go be a 3 seed. Or maybe it was a 2 seed. Anyway, I forget. But anyway, they played the Citadel and then worked their way. They eliminate Georgia Tech, the number 2 seed in the tournament. And then they go take down number 15-seeded Kansas. So nobody can say that Oklahoma didn't earn this. They absolutely did. And they're a team that can go make some racket up there. St. John's, I mean, let's be honest. When we found out that they'd won that regional in Tallahassee, you knew it was over. Right? You just knew it was. Alabama wins at 8-0 and 7-2. And, hey, great year, Johnnies. Great year. But I look at this Alabama team, and again, it's like they have just kind of slithered along like that moccasin in the reeds, man. And you think, hey, well, do they deserve to be a top eight? Well, yeah. And there were times this year on the show I didn't think they'd even host. I thought, hey, but then they beat Auburn. I'm like, holy smokes, right? And now here they are, with 3 years into the Rob Vaughn era, is that right? And they're in Omaha for the first time in a long time. And it's basically an all-SEC foursome down here in the bottom half. Alabama and Oklahoma, it's going to be interesting. It is. Then Texas. And honest to goodness, of the teams remaining in the tournament, and I know some of you say, well, you know, Ole Miss had an easy path. Not compared to Texas. Texas had the easiest path. And again, Ole Miss had to beat Arizona State. They had to go on the road. And then they had to go on the road at Auburn. You know, so it's not like – I disagree with some of you that, like, say, well, Ole Miss had an easy path. I just don't agree with that. I don't think it was easy at all. That's my feeling. And you're welcome to feel differently. And they go to Nebraska, who's a good team. But I thought Arizona State would give them some trouble. But – that's not what happened, you know. But Texas, they get Holy Cross, Tarleton State, and UCSB. Guys, it's a cakewalk regional. It is. And we talked about it when it came out. Then you get Oregon. And West Coast teams just don't play well historically against SEC teams, at least not in the modern era. And Texas, I mean, I watched these games, and I thought they were very entertaining, probably – other than the games that we covered, probably the most entertaining games that we saw, especially at game two. But Texas beats Oregon 11-3 and then 6-5. And so they would have had a game three, if necessary, game today. And that works out the way they needed it to. And then, of course, Georgia takes care of us and two wild games and games that we felt like we should have won and we easily could have lost, 13-12 and 11-9. And it's just so wild to think kind of what transpired out there. I mean, you score all these runs and hit all these home runs and you lose both games. I mean, it's really, really rough. And there's some things we got to talk about, you know. And it's just kind of the reality of life. We do. And we got to be honest with ourselves, too. And again, I'm not going to sit here and crap on the season. And again, maybe we expected a little bit too much of that bullpen. And we're going to spend some time in the last segment of the show kind of talking about portal needs and kind of portal evals from last year. And I think that's an important thing, too, that we got to be honest about, right? Because of the fact that, yeah, there's some criticisms, yes. There's some things we can provide some grace on, absolutely. And so we're going to talk about that here probably for our last little bit. And we got some football recruiting news we got to share with you, too. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, right? Especially when you're bringing a large group to town, and you should, right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. We had an amazing time when we stayed at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and I suspect you will, too. You've always thought about, hey, wouldn't it be great to get everybody together under one roof? Well, now you can, very affordably, and in your favorite town in the world, Starkville, Mississippi. Whether it's a friend group, a work group, no matter what you've got going on, six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths, available for your use. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands off 182. Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's great, right? Full-service kitchen, wet bar, back porch area, fire pit area, and plenty of parking. That's an underrated amenity. When you're getting everybody together, you don't think about that. It's like, hey, it's going to be so much fun. You get there, and there's like nowhere to park, or there's room for like one car. Not here. Again, it's the old country clubs. So there's plenty of parking for all those folks that used to come and shoot 18 holes and just have a good time together. Right, so you don't have to consider that aspect of it. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. You'll be glad you did. Also, some booking options will appear too. You can book through Airbnb, Vrbo, or the Evolve website. Now, if you book through Evolve, I can save you some money. Use promo code BSR10, BSR10, get you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show. So rather than have everybody scattered all over the Golden Triangle when it comes to ballgame weekends or just your favorite trips to Starkville, get everybody together. You know, you don't have to have a big group. You could just be, you know, yourself, right? You could just say, hey, I'm going to rent this big house and I'm going to sleep in a different room every night. You can do that too. There's no rules against that. But it's so much more fun when you have the people around you that mean so much to you. You need to plan a trip today. Be sure and check it out, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, I said that we would spend a little time talking about the portal class and of last year, and that's the thing too. And I think it's important to understand. It's so crazy because we always think because you know we want to be positive in what we do. A lot of times we just feel like, hey, it's all going to work out, right? It's all going to work out the way we want it to. Now, last year, Brian O'Connor's portal class is expected to be bigger than what we had this year, what we're going to have this coming summer. But and that stands to reason. He wanted to bring some of his own players with him, right? And we had some needs to fill. And so you look back, and if memory serves me correct, he may have been the first commitment. But Tomas Valinkas, right? We knew when we got him, we had a bona fide weekend starter. Didn't know if he was the Friday guy or a Saturday guy. Turned out he did a little bit of both. But that was a great one for us. That was a great portal addition, and that's a pre-existing relationship. And, of course, that led to bringing Vito Valencia's too. And he proved to be a very good player for us. And again, I think we got more value out of him than I expected. James Nunnally was also a Virginia guy that came and played a little bit last year, played a little bit this year. You know, he was your opening day right fielder and leadoff hitter. Things didn't, you know, work out long-term for him, but – next year he will be in contention. And he's the guy, again, we discussed, you know, we got to get the line drive rate up and the ground ball rate down. The contact rate is good. The strikeout rate is good. We've got to get better, though, a lot of things. Got to get bigger and stronger. And, of course, he'll be a junior next year. And this is a guy that turned down a lot of money to come play baseball on the college level. So we're going to need some good things to happen. We've already talked about Vito. And Sean James, of course, kind of a utility guy. And then Aiden Teal. And so the first five commitments in last year's portal class were players that Brian O'Connor already knew. And, of course, Aiden had his challenges, and you feel so bad for the kid. Very talented player. And, again, felt like he'd be an all-SEC candidate. Didn't work out that way. Sean James obviously played a little bit of utility stuff for us. But I think when you go back and look at all this, again, he went out and signed the guys he knew first. But the guy that had the biggest impact is the guy we already knew. Like, there wasn't, you know, Vito probably surprised us a little bit because kind of the book on him when he was at Illinois is that he couldn't hit elite pitching. Well, he hit some elite pitching for us, and maybe that's a tribute to Kevin McMullen and the job that he's done. But by and large, you didn't have a ton of O'Connor guys, right, come in and just take over the team. And I think that says a lot about Brian O'Connor. We talked about this earlier in the year. Guys, he didn't know Jacob Parker. He may have known who he was, but he didn't have a relationship with him. And so, again, he gets here. Jacob Parker's on the bench. James Nonnally starts. And then Vito starts getting some play out there in right field. And then we start platooning Parker in that eventually Parker takes over. And then look what he does. He has an All-American freshman campaign. But it says a lot about Brian O'Connor that, in the end, the guy that sits next to him in the final post-game press conference of the year is Jacob Parker. The young man has become a star at Mississippi State, and we're going to build a program around him the next couple of years. We're going to have a lot of good pitching next year too, obviously. But offensively, he is the drawing card for other players. It's a fantastic development. And again, Brian O'Connor played the best player. He didn't just say, well, I don't have a comfort level with Jacob Parker. I don't know if I can trust Jacob Parker. Jacob had to earn it. He did, and Oak made him earn it. And it's just so ironic you look back and think opening day, he's not in the lineup, but he's the hero in the final game of the year. And again, it says a lot about Jacob Parker and a lot about Brian O'Connor. So he could have just come in here and said, hey, I'm just going to stick with my guys, and maybe these young guys will have an opportunity next year. He put his own guy on the bench to play Jacob Parker, and they're all his guys now, but you understand my point behind that. That's an important aspect of this thing. And again, I think it speaks volumes. Ryder Woodson came shortly after that. Played sparingly at North Carolina State. Had a really good postseason. Only had 30 at-bats last year. Ended up hitting .333. Had three home runs too. And he was nearly a double-digit home run guy for us. And I think one of the best things that happened to Ryder Woodson was getting a break, right? I think he was pressing a little bit too much. He takes three games off. And, guys, defensively, what he did down the stretch was absolutely outstanding. Not to mention what he did. And heading into Super Regional, he was hitting .386 in the last 11 games. Impressive. Absolutely impressive. And, yeah, he's got to get a little bit better defensively. But, you know, what guys need especially defensively is reps. You got to get reps. You could spend a lot of time in the cage. You got to hit live pitching. But if you want to stay in the lineup, you got to make plays on defense. And I think Ryder Woodson will be okay next year. Some people have mentioned that, hey, maybe we should move to third base. I don't think the bat's big enough. I think you can find other value at third base. And, you know, we got some players coming in as official visitors in the next few days that are of note and can play corner infield spots for us. And that's an important aspect of this thing. But, yeah, I expect Ryder Woodson to be your opening day shortstop next year. We brought in Maddox Webb. We talked about the numbers earlier. And, again, he had a good run at the Citadel. And I think he came in here and showed us real value, too. I mean, it was – honestly, against LSU, you know, he pitches in all three games. And I don't know that he's been the same since then. Honestly, right? And, again, sometimes you got to save guys from yourself, but guys want to play. They absolutely want to play. And that was a huge series win for us, even though LSU was struggling. And so that's kind of the thing that I remember Maddox Webb for, is that LSU series. I mean, he was so and selfish and willing to go out there. And Tyler Pitzer, a guy that came in last year wanting to challenge for a starting role on this team. It didn't work out, but he did find a role for himself and then ends up pitching in the postseason, doing some great things for us. And I hate that it ended the way that it did for him. I really do. And again, could he have been a midweek starter? I think he was just too valuable. We talked about Jackson Logar. Just had one appearance and pitched just one inning this year. And that was the guy, too, that we thought, well, maybe Jackson Logar can be a middle relief guy for us. It just didn't come together. He was a starter at JMU. He had 14 starts last year, went 4-5. Had a 3.53 ERA. Allowed, I'm trying to look at innings pitched here, but I can't see it. 74 innings pitched. He allowed 50 hits. We talk about you want to be less than one hit per. Well, he was. He's 50 of 74, and he had a strikeout per. And so we really thought he would do some things. This didn't work out for us. Blake Bevis, of course, hit 301 last year, had 18 jacks, and we thought that was going to be a big part of things for us, too. And we worked him in some at left. He played some at first. And he had a stretch there where you couldn't even pitch to him. But I don't know that we got our full value out of him, but I don't think that's his fault. I think there were more talented players than there were spots in the order. But I'm glad that Blake came our way. He's a fabulous young man. I wish him the best. Kevin Maluski, of course, you know, there weren't a lot of great catchers in the portal. And we felt like between Carson Tenney and Kevin Maluski, we had to get one. Now, Carson obviously is going to play on and probably be the first college catcher taken in the draft. But Maluski, once he got healthy, kind of got some things going. And everybody talks a little bit about the batting average. Last year at Seton Hall, he hit over 300. You know, and so maybe early in the year he was pressing a little bit. Down the stretch, he kind of figured some things out. And I think there's something to build upon there. I don't think that he has enough value right now to command a lot of money. Now, maybe somebody takes a flyer on him with an 18th, 19th, or 20th round pick just to see if he'll sign, for the minimum. And I think we can offset that. Now, there are some guys that get out there that are just kind of ready for school, right? They're just ready to get done with school and get back into, making some money and playing pro baseball and not having to go to class. So that I can never rule out that possibility. But I do expect Kevin Maluski back. William Kirk, we talked about him earlier. I mean, last year he was injured the full year. He was in line to be the Sunday starter at Virginia last year. Tears the ACL, comes to Mississippi State, starts getting some play, gets three appearances. Things appear to be kind of rounding into form for him, and goodness gracious, he tears the ACL, another ACL. And what we have learned is that people that tear their ACL in non-contact injuries have a propensity to tear the other one. It's just something to do with the genetics. And we hope that he's back to 100% next year. We mentioned Brendan Sweeney, another guy that wanted to come in here and do some big things for Mississippi State. And at times he did, and at times he didn't. And, Brendan, another good guy. I mean, yeah, that's the thing, too. You know, I don't think we've signed any bad actors. And I think that's an important aspect of what's made this team successful. Drew Wires, talked about him earlier, too, was the player of the year last year in his conference when he was at Bryant. But he just had the one big year. And it's like talking to some of my scouting friends, I was like, what happens here? When you've got guys that have bounced around and they finally figured out, and then they have what we call the currency year, right? They have the year where they thought they'd break through. And a lot of guys then want to go get in the portal thinking, hey, I can do this at the next level. Drew Wires maybe should have stayed at Bryant. And what I mean by that is he didn't get drafted, but I think he probably would have put up some bigger numbers. And he didn't get opportunities here because Ryder Woodson ultimately won the job. And there are other people that were advocating for Drew. And again, a great young man, was doing whatever he could to help a team, played some at second. I mean, you need some glue guys, and Drew was a glue guy and a great teammate. We talked about Andrew Raymond already in the portal. And can you blame him, right? He came in here hoping to win the job after playing extensively as a freshman at George Mason. He comes in, he plays some, hits a couple tanks for us, struggled at times receiving, and then ultimately Maluski took over. And so if you're Raymond and you feel like Maluski's coming back, why would you waste another year of eligibility? Next year's a draft year for him. He's got to get out there and show he can do it. So that's an important aspect of all of this, right? So again, you run through these names, and you go back and you remember, like, as they, you know, signed with us, you had the highest of hopes, right? But you got a mixed bag of results. That's going to be the case with almost every portal guy you get, right? I mean, that's just how it's going to be. You know, nobody, you only got 9 spots in the order. You only got so many innings you can cover. Now, obviously, if there are guys out there that, you know, have the ability to get outs and bullpen, we want them. We want to talk to all those guys. And there's already been a rush of players into the portal. And now that seasons are ending and exit interviews are going on, there'll be some other guys that will leave. And that may be the case for us, too. We expect there to be some other guys going to portal. And some guys need the reset, right? That's just the reality of life. You know, some guys, I think about Josh Hatcher, right? Man, Josh Hatcher in 2020 was having the best season of his college career. He was crushing the baseball. Well, 2021 rolls around, and things aren't quite as they should be, right, or as he wants them to be. Well, he ends up winning a national championship, obviously, and he was part of our run in Omaha. You remember that ground ball against Virginia, right, that he beats out and ultimately comes around to score, right? Incredible. Remember the one with Rowdy round second? He's like, Josh, what are you doing? Because they held him at third, and Rowdy hurries back. But Josh Hatcher transfers to Kennesaw State and ends up getting drafted. I don't know what Josh is doing these days, but that was the right thing for Josh. And everybody has to do what they think is right for them, right? That's the reality of all of this. The world's a world of power in and of itself to everybody, right? Everybody has to do what they need to do because you only get a short time in life to play ball. I mean, that's just how it is. Right? And so some of you, I know, would be content to just kind of be on a team that accomplishes some great things. I would want to contribute. Like, even if we didn't go win an AFL championship, I would rather be on the field and competing and making a difference. And there are other guys that are just kind of happy to be a part of a great team, to wear the uniform, and I understand it and I respect it. The portal's going to run from June 1st to June 30th, if memory serves me correct here. And so, you know, it gives everybody some time to kind of navigate through the rest of the postseason, and then you figure it out. And it's all going to be over with in about 10 days anyway. And then you've got, you know, you'll know who all is in the portal. And a reminder, we always talk about this, you have until June 30th to get into the portal, not to make a decision. You still have really all the way up to fall enrollment to make a decision if a team is willing to wait on you, but most aren't. They want to get it done. And every year, we end up taking some guys after the draft. We take some guys that may get drafted. We take some guys that hope to get drafted and then didn't get drafted. And so there'll be value in the portal after the draft. And I think that's, you know, the draft isn't until July 11th. And so we got plenty of time to figure this thing out. We're going to be working the phones every day. We're not going to get it all. We're going to do our best to get you guys information as we discover it. But I can tell you, it's a little different. Like with the football stuff, like guys put out on social media when they're going to visit. Their agencies put out who and where they're going to visit. Things are just a little more secretive when it comes to baseball stuff. And it always has been. Like, you don't see high school recruits tweeting out all their offers. And nowadays, between rev share and scholarships that are funded, I mean, everybody, it's not like it used to be. Used to, you know, you get guys to come to school for books or guys that are coming to school for room and board, you know, and people didn't want the offer out there because they didn't want their competitors to know who all had offered. Well, nowadays, like, everybody that goes and plays as an SEC school, except maybe Missouri, is going to graduate, for the most part, debt-free. Right, they're going to have their college experience paid for. But there is still some reluctance. And even when I interview some of these guys that make a decision to come to Mississippi State, they don't like to talk about the schools that that they didn't pick. Now, it's a little different now because you phrase it a little bit different, right? Where all'd you visit, you know? Now, that doesn't mean that those offers from those schools are on par with everything else. Now, everybody's got a bit of an asking price, and so everybody may be in the ballpark, pardon the pun, but it doesn't mean that all these schools, like say for an example, we may have a guy out there that, hey, we're going to fully fund a scholarship, but there's no rev share attached to it. Well, then all of a sudden somebody later in the process, I mean, let's say, you know, Arkansas loses a guy to the draft and this guy hadn't signed yet. They may come and say, hey, we'll fully fund a scholarship and we'll give you X number of dollars. Well, then, you know, they go, right? And that's important to understand that even though everybody's got the ability now to fully fund baseball, not everybody does, but there are some teams out there, obviously, including Mississippi State, that also have committed a lot of rev share dollars to this thing too. So we're going to put a great class together. Obviously, our biggest needs are bullpen pitching, corner infielders, outfielders. And, you know, we brought in, you know, some guys last weekend to visit. And that's always a good thing too, right? But Brady Christman is already committed. He's your first commitment towards the Mississippi State portal class. I think there could be some this weekend. You know, we'll see. You never know with this stuff, right? I mean, it's like you never know when somebody decides, okay, I've seen enough. Let's just go ahead and shut this thing off. But if you don't know much about Brady, let me get you up to speed here. He's a Sun Belt Freshman of the Year. Played at Georgia Southern. And as a true freshman this year, guys, incredible numbers, right? 46 games and was a starter at 40 of them. Guys, he leads Georgia Southern pretty much in every offensive statistical category as a true freshman. A 6-foot, 210-pound true freshman from Mary Persons High School in Forsyth, Georgia. Incredible year for him. And just to kind of, it makes sense, right, that he would be the Sun Belt Freshman of the Year, even though they were a bad team this year. But guys, on a bad team, he doesn't have people to protect him. He had 384. 12 jacks, 44 RBI, 4 triples. He had just 5 doubles. That's the one thing he didn't lead him in, right? And again, he didn't play the full 56-game schedule. Only started 40 of those games and still scored 41 runs. So he's scoring a run per game. 3 of 3 in stolen bases. But that's a great get. Now, he could be a designated hitter. He can be a number two catcher. He can be a outfielder. Can he play left? Can he play right? Don't know. I haven't seen him play, right? We'll attempt to watch some film as we get a little closer to all this thing. But that's the first. And we had 3 visitors last week before we left to go to Athens. We'll have some more. But again, it's going to be a busy week. Because right now, that's one thing I give Brian O'Connor a lot of credit for. He has a singleness of purpose when he needs it. Like right now, you know, recruiting's a big thing, right? But we're just getting back from Athens today. We have team meetings, and a lot of that too, a lot of these guys, you know, are going to be leaving, getting ready to go to summer ball assignments and things like that. There's some guys that need rest. There's some guys that need some treatment. I mean, that's just part of it. So you have these exit meetings, and that's going to stretch out this week before guys leave, and you begin to kind of start taking an inventory of where you are. There may be some guys you sit down with that maybe you have every intent of bringing back, and they just say, you know, coach, I'm going to go somewhere else. You never know how that's going to happen. And so by the time we get to the end of the weekend, Brian O'Connor will know pretty much what he needs to do. I'm sure he has a really good general idea now about which directions he needs to go. He knows the strengths and weaknesses of the team better than anybody, right? But he will know where the players sit as far as their commitment to come back next year. Now, the majority of them have already decided and have already shared that information. You know, we're not going to do the big social media thing, right, where we have like, you know, because look what happens. One guy will announce he's coming back, and then all that does is lead to more questions. Well, how come so-and-so hadn't announced? And like, we went through all this last year, all of this last year. And so there will be guys, obviously, that have already made the decision. It's not a drama-filled decision for them. You know, like Jack, you think Jack Bauer, Tomas Valančiūnas, you don't have to worry about those guys. They're going to be back. Jacob Parker is going to be back, right? And so there's no point in getting upset about that and like, hey, where's the Instagram post on this? How come so-and-so hadn't done anything? I remember like last year, like Noah Sullivan didn't do anything forever. And I think maybe after the draft he did something. But it's like everybody's like, well, I don't understand. Not everything needs to be communicated. And this is one of those situations here. We don't need it. And we got a bunch of guys that it's already done and it doesn't need to be worried about. And the sooner we can get that out there, the better it is for you guys. But let's be honest about that. Our goal is to win the NFL championship. Our goal is not necessarily everybody's feelings, right? So I share that with you because it's important to understand. Brian O'Connor has his arms around this thing. Brian O'Connor doesn't need the social media advice, you know, from all the armchair coaches. They don't need it. And so now we get settled. And again, we will have some more guys get in the portal. That's to be expected. And you know what? It's okay. But it's not going to be a bunch, right? We went through a situation last year where Brian O'Connor had to purge some players from the roster because they didn't fit his vision. And that's not an indictment on those guys. And, of course, you know, Justin Parker was here too. And so they could kind of fill those guys in. Hey, this is what this guy was good at. This is what he wasn't good at. And then, of course, you know, I think about Michael O'Brien. Great young man. Great young man. But you know what? We had Aiden Thiel coming in. Expected him to be the everyday center fielder. We had James Nunley coming in. So before Brian O'Connor sits down with Michael O'Brien, he already knows, well, Bryce Chance is returning, right? I know Aiden Thiel's coming with me. I know James Nunley's coming in. And so when Michael O'Brien sits down and says, hey, I need X number of at-bats next year, and O'Connor's like, I don't know that I can promise you that. And so if you want to go get in the portal and see if you can find it somewhere, then sure. But the bottom line was is that it was an honest conversation between two adults, between Brian O'Connor and Michael O'Brien. Michael communicated what he wanted and needed and shared he wanted to stay, but he wanted to have a bigger role in the team. And O'Connor tells him, hey, I can't guarantee you that. You may have some conversations like that this year. And, of course, Michael O'Brien goes to Arkansas Little Rock and is part of a historic team up there. That doesn't mean he's coming back here, but maybe he's boosted his stock a little bit more and may have an opportunity to go somewhere else. Maybe he transfers closer to home. You know, I love the O'Briens. I love them all. Mike, Shannon, everybody. I love them all. So we wish the best for them. But the reality of it is everybody, when they sit down at the end of the season, everybody's going to have a vision of what they want for their future. And if it aligns, then great. And if it doesn't, there's no hard feelings, right? There's nobody right now that you look at and say, you know, that guy absolutely needs to leave our program, right? There may be some guys that have underperformed, but there's nobody that we look at and say this was a bad act or this guy was a cancer to the team, he was a problem in the locker room. None of those guys exist on this existing roster. And that's important to understand, and I think it's important you guys know that too. We've had some guys at times that have been a bit of a challenge. Yeah, it's true. And when you're the new coach coming in, you don't want to deal with drama. And you got guys out there that, if you're producing, we can kind of deal with a little bit, right? But if you're not producing, you hadn't had a big role on the team, and you're kind of a malcontent, we got to move on. And we've already gone through that aspect of it, right? We've gone through that last year. So we've laid a good foundation, as O'Connor said on Sunday, and now we push ahead. And so, again, I don't think it'll be as big a portal class. It's not going to be tiny. It's not going to be a Vanderbilt, like, 5-6 players. It'd probably be, I don't know, 10 or so. I would set the over and under at 10. I don't think we get to be 15-16. I just don't think that's the case. I don't think you have those many needs because you've got a really good class coming in. But you need some production offensively to replace what you've got outgoing. And, again, we've got some guys already playing summer league ball and doing well, and we'll have some updates for you on that over at jeanspage.com. If you hadn't done so, visit dutynoblebook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles there. It's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dog Pile, The Dude, and the personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. Be sure and check that out. And come float with us at True Rest Float Spa, Starkville. I'm like 3 weeks overdue to get a float. And the bride has kind of recognized that too. So I'm going to get in there and float later this week. I was going to float tomorrow, but she's kind of booked up and I want to be there. I think we got like 16 or 17 on a Tuesday. And we're very grateful for that and appreciate everybody that has frequented the business and shared the Facebook post and your experiences. And again, one of the things that I think people are learning is how well that I'm married. And I'm very blessed in that respect. You give her a call at 662-268-7601. Speak directly with my lovely wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you have about floating. She can get you on the schedule. You can always just book online, but we do encourage you to check your email because there are some important documents for first-time floaters that need to be filled out. There's some directions. And after you've done all that stuff, you can just kind of come when you want to. And of course, the next aspect of this thing is jeanspage.com. Come join us over at Jeanspage, 60% off the annual subscription price now. Be sure and check it out. Nobody's going to give you more comprehensive coverage of Mississippi State athletics than we are, and we have proven that year after year after year after year. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.